Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshaw, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at @ypsport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. And if you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
So, this week we're going to be discussing the start of England's World Cup campaign, as well as doing a season-so-far review of teams at Leagues 1 and 2. So let's kick off by looking at England, who kicked off their World Cup campaign with a 6-2 win over Iran, with Bukayo Saka scoring a brace, and it also saw Jude Bellingham scoring his first goal in an England shirt. With all the issues surrounding the tournament aside, what did you make of the performance, and where do you think they could improve ahead of their game against the US? And also, what do you think we could expect to see when they come up against Wales in the last group game, Stuart?
Well, I think a brilliant start, first and foremost. I mean, I was one of those who was a little bit wary. I think I don't think it took a brain surgeon to work out that Iran were going to sit deep and do their best to frustrate England, and that if England didn't get an early goal, they could have the sort of awkward start that some of the other big nations have had so far. But they did get the early goal, and from there it was a really good, really encouraging performance. So that was pleasing in a perverse kind of a way, was that there were a couple of sloppy defensive moments which they got punished for in terms of conceding goals, but not punished in terms of the results. So it sort of gives Gareth Southgate something to point to and say to his players, look, this is where we need to improve. But they're not doing it from the same position that, you know, Argentina and Germany are doing it from. So I think all in all, it was a good exercise for England. You know, I think they'll obviously be tougher tests to come. But it just takes the pressure off when you get a good win in the first game. It makes it so much easier to manage your squad from there on in. And you know, they'll need to be at their best against Wales, because, you know, it's sort of the World Cup equivalent of a derby. You know, you absolutely know Wales are going to be, you know, bang at it, really up for the game. You know, they showed in Euro 2016 how many problems they can cause England. So there can't be any sort of easing up mentally from here for England. They'll know that against Wales. But at least they've got, you know, they've got the confidence of a really good start under their belts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think everyone would have certainly taken that. I think it's surpassed expectations, even accounting for the fact that it was obviously the Iranians, the weakest team in the group, and it was, you know, starts the tournament's go. It was a pretty nice one, but I can still remember as Stuart. You probably can as well. You know, we've played, you know, teams of the ilk of Tunisia, others too, who've given us problems. So, yeah, it was job done. I thought they were very, very slick straight away. I mean, from the opening sort of minutes, really, they got into the passing rhythm, looked confident on the surface, plenty of energy about them and movement going forward. And, you know, the fact that five different goal scorers as well, and none of them were Harry Kane, even though I thought he played extremely well without scoring. So yeah, some real good sort of fluency going forward. I take Stuart's point about letting in a couple of goals. Obviously, you wouldn't have sort of preferred that, but you sort of think about it, and it might have probably taken away a lot of people getting overly carried away, even as good as England were for patches of that game. There's stuff to improve on, but you know, it's, I still think the tournament is, from an England perspective, it's about them sort of, you know, going forward and threatening teams. I think that's, I think in their case, probably attack will be the best form of defence. You look at the Euros last summer, England's game plan with the two deep lying midfielders protecting the defence. You know, they're absolutely outstanding in the defensive duties, only conceded two goals in the whole tournament. And, you know, with those figures, you should be winning it, really. And, you know, I think England's story will be it'll be about going the other way and how, when they play some of the bigger teams, taking the chances and unsettling them with what they've got in the ranks. And they've, you know, got plenty of options in the final third.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want perfection in the first game. You know, we've seen numerous examples of it in the past of teams starting tournaments slowly and getting into it. You need those moments of adversity to learn from. You know, the flip side is you have a side coming in, you know, 36 games unbeaten, and as soon as they get tested by Saudi Arabia, they lose the game, sort of thing. So you do need that early adversity. As with everything else, you just want it in the right balance. So it was sort of ideal for England in that respect. And as Leon says, five goal scorers, none of whom are Harry Kane, is great, because you know Harry Kane is going to produce down the line, and all five of them scoring the first World Cup goals. So, you know, as an exercise in getting confidence into those attacking players, it was ideal, really. And you know, they look really dangerous. I think we know with this England team, you know, they're going to rely a lot on set pieces and crosses into the box. And, you know, almost every time a cross went in, it seemed Harry Maguire won the header and England sort of went from there. And that's going to be a real weapon for them in this tournament against, you know, better teams who are frankly harder to break down.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest strengths, Stuart, isn't it? Even, you know, you look at some of the players who didn't play. I mean, obviously Maddison, Alexander-Arnold, you know, they're players who prove to the clubs that they can create things from set plays and, you know, special deliveries. And who's to say that, you know, quite a few others will have to play some sort of part in the tournament. So that was encouraging. You know, they've got all manner of set piece takers, haven't they? You know, you know, Mount can take them, and, you know, Kieran Trippier. They're pretty blessed in that regard, and yeah, very encouraging. It was only a round, but it'll be a good test against Wales. If Kiefer Moore starts, and you probably suspect he will after his impact from the bench against the States, it's a different sort of player, that physical forward. I'll be interested to see how England's backline handle him. But, you know, first things first, let's hope that England and Wales can both have a steady enough passage to the last 16, and then the fun can really begin, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, England will have to be good on defensive set pieces against Wales as well, because, you know, we know how good Gareth, you know, Leon's mentioned there's Kiefer Moore to aim at if he's on the pitch. We know how good Gareth Bale is at delivering them. Huddersfield fans will be able to tell you all about how good Sauber Thomas is at delivering them if he's on the pitch, you know, when there's a late free kick. So England will really have to be on their guard in that respect. But as I say, it just eases the pressure a little bit to get such a good win in that first game, whereas, you know, you look at teams who start with a defeat and you're already panicking about whether you're going to get out the group, what position you're going to get out of the group, whereas Southgate's in a position now where there'll be a little bit in the back of his mind thinking, oh, well, I might be able to give Calvin Phillips a few minutes here, or I might be able to give Harry Kane a few minutes rest there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And now we turn our attention a little closer to home, starting in League One with Sheffield Wednesday, who claimed all 3 points in their 1-0 victory over Shrewsbury Town, with Mark McGuinness scoring the decisive goal in the first half. With a trip to Derby County next on their agenda, how do they sort of continue their recent run of form, which has actually brought them up to third in the table, Leon?
Yeah, I think first of all, obviously last season was a real, you know, battle to the line to get the two automatic to motion slots, wasn't it? I know myself and Stuart covered Rotherham United towards the end of the season. It was incredibly tense, wasn't it? I remember the Sunderland game in the penultimate match, and obviously Stuart went to Gillingham, and it's got all the makings of one of those seasons, hasn't it? It's going to be two automatic places, but three into two don't go. There's a bit of a gap already. I mean, what we're still in November, and I think it's 9 points between I think it's Peterborough and Wednesday in third, and I think there's going to be ups and downs throughout the winter. Obviously, the pace setters have been Plymouth and Ipswich. They both had little dips of late, not massive dips, but a couple of draws, dropping points here and there. And Wednesday have done what they've had to do. They keep chipping away. They're very, the statistics are in front of where they were last season. And if you look at it last season, I think if they'd have started the run a bit earlier, they could have, gatecrashed even second place there. But yeah, they're nice and steady. They've had different sorts of results, haven't they? They've hit the straps a few times. Got five against Forest Green, if memory serves. I think they scored, was it four against Burton? But they sort of rolled up the sleeves away from home and, got single goal victories. Going with likes to Accrington, they don't concede many goals on the travels. And this is usually the time of, I think I wrote in the piece the other day, it's the time of year where the squads and the teams with the best options can sort of come into their own in the winter grind. And even though they've had one or two, a few injuries here and there, Wednesday look to have the bases covered. So yeah, it's they've had some okay games of late, but it's all right saying that. You've got to negotiate them, haven't you? And they managed to do that. But a very intriguing game at Derby, who are getting their act together under Paul Warne, next up in the league.
Yeah, I mean, the defeat against Plymouth was the fifth of the season in all competitions, and it just felt it was a little bit bitty at that stage of the season. But they're 10 unbeaten since. They're getting a really relentless roll. And, performances won't be ultra consistent, over these winter months. But so long as results are, as Leon says, you might win a game 5-0, you might win a game 1-0. But so long as they're winning games, so long as they're finding a way to win games when they're not at their best, and they're taking full advantage when they're at their best. I mean, they've got no choice but to do that with the pace that Plymouth and Ipswich are setting. As Leon says, whoever misses out over those three in terms of automatic promotion is going to probably be desperately unlucky. But it's just such a high standard promotion race that they really can't afford to take their eyes off the ball. So, I mean, that is the key for the Sheffield Wednesday, just to stay ultra focused. And to be honest with you, having a high-profile game at Derby County is ideal, really, because there's absolutely no excuse for taking your eye off the ball, in matches like that. They feel like they're in a good groove in terms of results, particularly, and long may it continue.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of look at the fixtures sort of coming up. I think they've got three out of the next four away. They've got to go to Derby, a long trip to Exeter. And they've got Fleetwood on Boxing Day. It's just to keep, as Stuart rightly says, keeping your heads down, just straight on business. And they have to win with a bit of style, great. If they don't, they have to roll up the sleeves. You just take it, don't you? It just looks a real fascinating race at the top. I'm sort of looking at the game, I've just sort of noticed in late winter, I think they've got three games in a row. They've got go to Orwell to face Barnsley. Barnsley like to beat Sheffield Wednesday like no other team. That'll bring its own issues going when they get into that game. They've got Plymouth at home after that, and they've got Ipswich away. I know it's a fair win in advance, but that really does stand out and makes the mouth water even at this sort of early point of the winter. But yeah, they're going along fine. They won't need any motivation. They'll obviously remember the events at the end of last season against Sunderland. That's going to be a driver for a lot of the players who were there in that lineup. So yeah, there's going to be it's I think the issue is he's Paul Warner as well. I'm sort of speaking about him again. I remember what he said at Rotherham last season. I think he's spot on, and it applies to Sheffield Wednesday. It's not about necessarily losing games. It's avoiding losing back-to-back games. You know, you just got to, if you do have a setback, get back on the horse straight away. And in fairness to Wednesday, they're showing a strong jaw in that regard.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they feel like a better equipped squad to me, Leon. I don't know if you agree, to just deal with those difficult games, you know, those games where you go away from home and you're expected to win and it's just not happening. Or like you say, you know, the game on the back of a defeat. They just feel like they're a bit mentally tougher, a bit more able to sort of grind out the wins on the days when things aren't going well and still as good as they've seen in some of the home games on the days when the sun's shining and you've got to make hay.
I think having that mentality will be massive, Stuart. I mean, they're an extremely big club at that level. If they're in a strong position when it gets to March, April, squeaky bum time, there's going to be a hell of a lot of expectation on Sheffield Wednesday, whether they go, whether they're going away from home, packed away crowds. They'll be getting big crowds at Hillsborough, and it's dealing with that side of it. Obviously, it's still a fair win in advance, but that it's a real power behind you if you're a player and you've got that, but you've got to take it as well.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And next we turn our attention to Barnsley, who after their 3-1 victory over Milton Keynes Dons have also found themselves a bit of a purple patch with regards to results. Their last three wins have helped them to get into the playoff places themselves. What do you think the Tykes have to do to sort of help maintain this form and hopefully help them to get back into the Championship at the end of the season, Stuart?
Well, I just think the key to everything Michael Duff's done at Barnsley this season is just the defensive resilience they've got. So that, you know, we know that, we've said many times on this podcast, they could do with an extra striker or two just to give them extra options. You know, they've lost Luke Thomas through injury, which was a big blow to them in terms of their creativity. But with the platform they've got defensively, they know that on days when things aren't quite happening for them up front, they can still get points, you know, and then on days when it is working, and they're having a few of them recently, they can get, you know, they can take full advantage. So I think for them, it's just all about, and I'm absolutely certain that Michael Duff will be hammering this into them, just never letting that defensive concentration slip, because I think that really is the key to their success under him. It's all based on being really solid. Solid defensively, and as we all know, if you keep a clean sheet, you don't lose the game.
Yeah,
I think I think it's been a pretty sound start to life under Michael Duff. Obviously, they had the early season, you know, for some fine win at Sheffield Wednesday. I did the Bristol Rovers home game in August. They were excellent in that game as well. There was, you know, a bit of expectation happening, and then they've had one or two little bumps in the road, especially at home. Got turned over by I think it was Exeter, wasn't it? They beat them 2-0, and they had an earlier one against Wickham as well, where they lost 3-0. So they've handled those difficult moments and come back. And I think there's a team where there's been contributions in you know, across the park, really. With Stuart's right to talk about the defensive strength, which was, you know, it was important after last season, wasn't it? I mean, they needed a solid foundation. They've got, for me, they've got arguably the best defender in the central defender in the division in Mads Andersen. He's a player who's too good for League One, and he's whenever I've seen Barnsley this season, he's been outstanding, a leader, but a different sort of leader. He sort of leads by example, and he's sort of set the tone. I think they've got some good midfield options. Quite a few have made contributions. We obviously spoke about Josh Benson at the start of the season. He was flying, knocking in some cracking goals. One or two others have come to the party. Herbie Kane, by all accounts, was excellent against Milton Keynes last week. Adam Phillips is on a little bit of a goal scoring run. So yeah, there's some good competition in there. Obviously, Devante Cole had a great spell at the start of the season, even though the goals have dried up a little bit, he's still been contributing. So yeah, I think I think they're set fair, and then they're in a nice position. And you know, one thing about Michael Duff is he's not the sort of guy who gets carried away in any way, shape, or form. You know, his mantra basically is: it's can we win the first half? If we do that, or if we lose it, can we win the second half? Extremely grounded. They've been very, very consistent defensively away from home. I don't think they've conceded an away goal in the second half of league games this season, which Rotherham, I mean, they had sort of a similar sort of mad statistic last season. So that augurs well for the organisation, the resolve and the team spirit as well. So, yeah, they're in a nice little place at the moment, but he won't be getting carried away, that's for sure, Michael Duff.
No.
But I just think when you've got that platform, obviously Phillips wasn't there last season, Herbie Kane was out on loan, but you know, you look at the difference in Josh Benson and what he's been able to do this season, and that probably partly just comes from the confidence of knowing that things are secure behind him, and you know, he can make runs and he can take risks because he's got belief in the defenders behind him, you know. And obviously you hear a lot of managers come in and talk about building from the back, but that's why it's just so important in terms of the overall belief of a team that, yeah, you know, you can trust your defenders to do their job, and it gives you a bit more freedom as those playing further up to you know, to take more risks and do your job better.
Yeah,
it could be one of those in January, Stuart. It could be, I mean, it's going to be important for quite a few teams, but if Barnsley are in a handy position, can they keep, you know, the better players if there's interest, and can they sort of maybe add just a couple more that I know that Michael Duff wants? Maybe, you know, you look at them, you think they're probably a striker light, aren't they? Probably, yeah, do with getting one in that regard in January. But they should be in a decent, all things considered, you'd think they'll be in a decent position in January. There's not much cause to do too much, really. You know, one or two incomings, and you know, just make sure that, you know, the better players are there at the end of the window, and then they could have a chance in the, you know, the final third of the season. So I think that'll be key in that regard for Barnsley.
Yeah. And next we turn our attention to League Two and Bradford City, who fell to a 3-1 defeat when they went head-to-head with Northampton Town. They now sit just inside the playoff spots. How do they sort of improve ahead of their next game, which is against top of the table Leighton Orient, Leon?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything really fundamentally wrong as such. I did the game on Saturday against Northampton, and Bradford didn't play well. I mean, I've done a few sort of Bradford league games over the years, and you know, not all the time, but quite often there can be a bit of expectation. Sort of supporters thinking, you know, this will be the day when we, you know, we make a significant move. And it was a big afternoon in the season when you sort of looked at the table beforehand. If they'd have won, they'd have gone above Northampton into third. They were poor on the day, but sometimes you just got to give credit to the opposition. And Northampton were outstanding. Their front three were superb and a real strong threat on the counter. It was difficult conditions, but Bradford just couldn't get it going. The passing was a little awry. You know, players that you expect to be stronger and more consistent, you know, like Richie Smallwood, weren't the best, and they had a bit of an off day across the pitch. And by all accounts, they got not to get out to Salford in the Papa John's in midweek. And I don't mean to play terribly. The sort of the passing in the supply line was a little bit off beam. And yeah, that was one thing about the Northampton game as well. The sort of final ball and the quality of passing let them down a bit. And I think it's the first time they've lost 2 on the trot as well this season. So I suppose an argument for some on some levels to say maybe it's not a bad thing. They've got a week or so to get things right before a hard game with Orient, or I suppose part of Mark Hughes will have been wanting to get back into action straight away. I wouldn't overly sort of worry about Bradford. I mentioned earlier about Sheffield Wednesday this time of year. You know, the sides with the strength in depth and the options, and they've got, they seem to be pretty well stocked in terms of the squad if you compare it to most in that division. So, yeah, hopefully a little bit of a blip. And I suppose one thing now is that it's the sole focus for Bradford, isn't it? The league now. They're out of the FA Cup. they're out of the Papa John's trophy. It's tunnel vision now. Yeah. But hopefully they can, you know, if they can get back on track with a, you know, a good away result at Leyton Orient. And the away form's been very good of late, hasn't it? They've had a bit of a slump at home, but they've, you know, obviously gone to Sutton and won and Mansfield and another venue, which isn't an easy one at League Two level. The one there, it would be after a couple of disappointing results, it'd be a bit of a statement if they got a result there.
Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot on this podcast. We often talk about Bradford and Sheffield Wednesday in the same breath. And I think this will apply equally to Sheffield Wednesday if they have back-to-back defeats at some stage. I think it's just, in answer to your question, how do they improve? It's just about keeping the nerve. You know, with those clubs, with the expectations on them in the division they're in, there is always the danger that things get a bit hysterical, you know, when there are a couple of defeats. I think at Bradford at the moment, I think there's enough confidence in Mark Hughes from the supporters or what have you that the response is more measured. But like we said with England, you know, every team, every season, every competition, you're going to make mistakes. It's just about learning from them in the right way. I say, and in the case of those two clubs, not overreacting to them, really. And it's probably just a reminder, you know, Mark Hughes talked about they needed to show slightly better application slightly better execution. It's just a reminder of those principles that you need from time to time. And as Leon says, I'm very much of the same mindset of Leon. There is no need to panic. It's just a case of keeping you cool and just carrying on with what they know are the right things to do. They know they've got the players to do it. When all said and done, it's back-to-back defeats. One of those defeats is in the Papa John's Trophy. Not many Bradford fans are going to be throwing themselves off tall buildings because the team's been knocked out of that competition. It is what it is. Just learn from it. Take the lessons. Keep calm. And there's absolutely no reason why they can't, continue to push hard for promotion.
Yeah. And I think part of the ticket in bringing in Mark Hughes, he's a very experienced manager, managed, you know, a lot of high-profile Premier League clubs. He's certainly an individual who's not prone to panic. He's calm and measured in all his utterances, and he'll have been through this situation many times over, and he's a good figure to have in that regard. He'll keep nice and calm.
But I don't think in that respect the manager's often the problem. I think it's more the fact that bringing him in raises expectations, and it seems to me that the fans have been quite measured as well, and that's really important, because I think when things go awry at Valley Parade, that can sometimes be an issue. People start to panic off the field, and it seems to me anyway that the Bradford fans are keeping faith in their team so far, and that's going to be really important for them, because as measured as the manager is, you know, such a big fan base can have a really big bearing one way or the other, and at the moment at least they seem to be giving the team the support it needs.
Yeah. And next we turn our attention to Doncaster Rovers, who are currently sitting just a few points outside of the playoff places after falling to a 3-0 defeat when they welcomed Colchester United to the Eco Power Stadium. What does Danny Schofield sort of have to do to help his team to regain momentum to get into the playoff spot, Stuart?
Well, I just think it's an issue of time, really. I mean, you know, we talked about Sheffield Wednesday having five defeats in all competitions by the start of October. You know, Barnsley had a few defeats early on. It just takes time to bed in a new manager.
Yeah.
And you know, the issue that Doncaster Rovers may have is that, you know, sacking Gary McSheffrey when they did doesn't really give the manager much time. You know, if they're so fixed on, making promotion this season, and given that, you know, there were a few points, I think they were only about 3 points off the pace when McSheffrey was sacked, but they were off the pace. It doesn't give them much wriggle room. And I think particularly the way Schofield plays, it's kind of a high-risk game. There will be days when it just goes awry, and it's going to take a while for him to sort of iron those days out and get some consistency out of them. So my fear for Doncaster is that by the time they get to that stage, they may have given other teams too much of a head start. I mean, by all accounts, they were very good at Grimsby. I saw them against Stevenage in a game they lost, and they were very good that day. So it's not that they're not doing good things. It's just sort of putting the whole package together. And just as it took Michael Duff time, just as it took Darren Moore time, even though he wasn't new to Sheffield Wednesday this season, I think it'll take Danny Schofield time as well.
Hmm. Yeah, I just look at Doncaster, and they've had some good results, haven't they? On interspersed between the sort of inconsistency, obviously a very good result at Grimsby, for instance. And I just think he's obviously Schofield's finding out about his players and the mentality, and they look a side to me who can get a little bit roughed up. I'm not sure about how to cope with the physical stuff. And you look at some of the results they've had. You know, turned over at Barrow, got turned over at Hartlepool, well beaten at Carlisle on the travels, and you know, by all accounts, they obviously went to Colchester on Saturday, and there, you look at that bottom sort of clutch of teams in League Two. There look a few who are already sort of donning the war paint a bit, if you like, and I'm sure Colchester will have been, you know, scrapping for their lives there, and it seemed to, looking at Danny Schofield's comments, they were better than Doncaster all over the park, and they were more hungry and had that bit more desire. And I mean, he's finding out about his players. I just wonder about Doncaster when it becomes a bit of a battle and not a pure sort of footballing game, if you like. I'm not quite sure how many tools that they've got in that regard at the moment. But, you know, hopefully one or two players to come back. In a game like Saturday, you want your experienced players, and you're bound to miss somebody of the ilk of Tommy Rowe and Oliver as well. He's sort of done okay in batches last season. A big, strong, all right, young defender, but he's out at the moment. So you're hoping to get a couple of those back and start getting, obviously, playing the way that Danny Schofield wants, but, you know, building that sort of, you know, more consistent winning mentality, really. But as Stuart's right, well, you're going to get one or two bumps in the road. It's obviously changing the way they're playing, but just looking at Doncaster, for me, they've had one or two too many of those, the sort of games away from home where they've not really laid a glove on the opposition.
It would be lovely to see Danny Schofield get a full pre-season and a full season with the club, to just see how he can develop a team. I mean, he didn't even get a full pre-season at Huddersfield. They got most of it, though, but didn't get the results to last beyond September. You know, and I really hope he gets that at Doncaster next season. But I say they have sort of created a lot of pressure for themselves by sacking a manager for being off the pace for automatic promotion. And Gavin Baldwin was talking in September about how they expected to win promotion with the investment they've made in the club over the summer. I just think his methods require a bit of patience, and this will be a sticky period for them, with, as Leon said, interspersed with probably some really good wins and some really good football to watch. But I think it's going to take a while before you see those consistent results for Doncaster Rovers, and it might be a question of nerve as to whether people are prepared to stick with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's a hard league, isn't it? And it's never the easiest division to come in midships, is it, really? Especially at a team who sort of have been underperforming, been expected to, you know, be in the, certainly in the top six shake-up all season. He's trying to do that, but he's trying to keep the results on an even keel, but he's changing the way of playing, and that's very difficult at League One, at League Two level, coming in at this juncture of the season. So yeah, there's going to have to be a certain amount of patience required, and I suspect if Doncaster do manage to, you know, improve and somehow get into the top, into the sort of playoff positions, it's going to be a bit of a charge at the end of the season rather than anything else.
Yeah. And finally, for this week, we take a quick look at Harrogate Town, who were able to claim all 3 points against Mansfield Town, with Luke Armstrong scoring a brace in the encounter. Their next game will be a trip to Rochdale. How do you see Simon Weaver and his team sort of going into that game after their recent run results, Leon?
Well, I think first of all, I was delighted for them when I covered the Bradford game on Saturday, but I was obviously checking the scores as they come through, and I was an outstanding win. Mansfield on the day, they're one of the stronger sides in League Two. We all know about Nigel Clough and what a good operator he is at that level. They've got a good squad for League Two as well. So that was a terrific result, and I was pleased. They obviously did the game against Carlisle relatively recently, and I thought they were excellent. Harrogate really unlucky not to get 3 points. Offered a hell of a lot going forward. Of course, put Carlisle a lot of problems, especially in the first half with the movement and the fluidity, and they looked to have some really, really good footballers, but then on the back of that they drew, and then they were beaten at home by Leighton Orient, and you just wondered psychologically, obviously played well against Carlisle, not won, and they've been turned over by at home, how it would affect them. And they really did need a positive result against Mansfield, and they certainly got it. They're sort of chipping away. Luke Armstrong, who's been in decent form, hasn't he? I was impressed with against Carlisle. He managed to find the net on two occasions. You sort of look at Harrogate, the likes of Armstrong and Muldoon, and I quite like some of the loanees from Huddersfield, Danny Grant, Matty Daly, and Osterfield as well in midfield. They look at, without having seen that much of them, they look okay sort of going that way, but it's just if they can have the right sort of consistency defensive wise, and if they can sort of steady things down in that regard, I think they might just be okay, but it's going to be pretty tight.
I think the big thing, for Harrogate, as you say, the next league game's at Rochdale, but the next game is in the FA Cup at Hartlepool, and I think that's going to be massive for them on a number of levels. Hartlepool are bottom of the table. I've covered a lot of games at Victoria Park over the years, and I can guarantee you there'll be a proper football atmosphere at that game, and it will be a tough game for them. But I think if they can build on that Mansfield game with an FA Cup win, get themselves in the third round draw, I think that's just going to do them so much confidence. So much good in terms of their confidence going into that Rochdale game, which will be so important for them, because again, Rochdale are another team down there, and I think Leon's absolutely right as well to identify Luke Armstrong. I mean, he was such an important part for them when they started last season so well. So for him to, he'd only got one goal going in this season going into that Carlisle game, but now to have got three in his last three. If they can get him in a run of form again, I think that's going to do again so much good for not just his confidence, but the confidence of the whole team. So I do think that FA Cup tie is going to be sort of unusually high importance to Harrogate Town.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wapshall, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com. Or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening, look after yourselves, and bye for now.